Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Christopher Lee Power is a British actor and director whose career spans film, television, theatre and radio. He trained at Richmond Drama School, earning an Oxford diploma in acting, and further honed his craft at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. Recent screen credits include Tony in Our Country, The Maker in the Island at the Floral Pavilion, and Brian Levison QC in Happiness, The Ken Dodd Story. Christopher's stage work is wide-ranging, with performances in Shakespeare, Chekhov, and Brecht. In contemporary theatre, his roles include Howard the Narrator in On the Banks of the Royal Blue Mersey and Kenny in Under the Mersey Moon. Christopher is the director of Breaking Free, a powerful stage play based on his own life story, combining narration, sharp scene work, and a minimalistic aesthetic. The play explores trauma, resilience, and the search for identity. Breaking Free reflects Christopher's passion for truth in performance and his commitment to creating meaningful, socially driven work. Outside of his acting and directing, Christopher is the founder of the Power Foundation for Young People, which supports emerging talent through mentorship and creative opportunities. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Christopher Lee Power.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm in the UK. Now, I'm in an area called Wirral, which is not far from Liverpool. When people often ask me that question, I always say Liverpool. We are kind of a boat ride away, 10 minutes away from Liverpool. So it's much easier for me to say Liverpool.
Okay, so now let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel, okay, I want to be in this acting, creating world? And how did that journey progress?
Sadly, I was diagnosed with hyperactivity and speech problems as a child and had to go to a special hospital. And I didn't like it much. They were giving me therapy, but I enjoyed waiting for my mom on Thursdays. And when she arrived, we, the children in the hospital, would pull the tables together and the screens. And we would jump on the tables and we would perform. Now, my mum and dad were already entertainers. So my mother was a singer. Mm-hmm. My dad was a compere. So he would introduce the bands or the acts in the social clubs or the clubs. So from that moment on, I realized this is what I want to do in life. And when I went back to school, I was cast at the age of 11 in Scrooge. I remember putting the woolly jumper on. I was cast as a little boy that runs to buy Scrooge his big turkey.
Okay.
And I remember saying to myself, there's an audience. All the parents are sitting there. I've got this lovely woolly jumper on and a scarf. The lights are on. I'm on the stage. I'm at home. And you know what, Barrett, although I keep fit, at that time in the 1970s, I wasn't drawn to football or cricket or any of the sports at school. It was just the drama. That's where I felt at home. And I knew then at the age of 10, that's what I would like to do. But there was the journey to go on before I became the actor I am today.
You knew that then. Let's dive into that journey a little bit. Tell us more.
When you're hyperactive, you want attention. And that's what it is. It's similar to ADHD. And the medical profession didn't know much about hyperactivity. However, I felt that that energy, when it was focused on something artistic, like art or singing and dancing and drama, I felt a lot calmer. I could concentrate a lot more because at school I couldn't spell. I found it very difficult to focus in certain classes. I even left school without any qualifications. So I just knew that if I could find something I was good at, I know that I could overcome this hyperactivity. And it was drama. So as the years went on and I became a teenager, in the 1980s, I found it very difficult. It was very difficult to get a job. And so leaving school without any qualifications was very difficult. Yes, we had a job center. But again, I was going into the job center, looking on the boards, and mostly they were bricklaying or painter and decorator. There was hardly anything for someone like me who didn't want to get involved in that kind of work. Now, don't get me wrong, it's important to work. But then I came across a YTS, a youth training scheme, and they were offering £26.60 a week for someone to come and join their theatre company. And it was a bit like a rep company. You would learn the art of theatre, not just acting, but behind the scenes.
Oh, yes.
And so at the age of 17, I joined that. And that was my first pay as an actor. And I learned so much at that school. So really, that was the foundation. So going from my school, playing the young boy in Scrooge, to performing in front of parents at the hospital, this was a breakthrough. However, it wasn't drama school. And I knew in order for me to get to drama school, I had a lot of work to do. At that time in my life, I was very low. I was very depressed. I had a different accent then. I was very northern, Liverpool. And I had made the choice to go into acting and change my voice because I had a desire to play the big characters in Shakespeare and Chekhov and Brecht. I wanted to play the lawyers and the politicians and the kings. And so I knew I couldn't do that at the age of 17. And I found a mentor, a gentleman called Rom, when I went to college. I went back into education, by the way. Although I'd lost out on education, with the help of a local church and a youth club, I was encouraged to go forward. And so I signed up for a drama college. It wasn't drama school, but it was a drama college that did English, maths, music, dance, and of course, the acting side. And I met a gentleman called Ron. And Ron took me under his wings. And that's where things started to change dynamically, because he worked with me on my voice. He worked with me on culture. He taught me about life skills. He taught me about art, about Egypt and Greece and Rome and those kind of romantic stories that came out of them. And as the years went on, I started to develop more skills as an actor. My voice started to change. But at that time, I still hadn't gone to drama school.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to achieve at that point in my life.
A voice is very much characterized by labels in society. And you reference back in that time, it wouldn't be with the accent that you had, the northern accent, you wouldn't necessarily be able to play the politicians, the lawyers, the kings, and so forth. Do you think that has changed over the years now, that accents are not as prevalent in the type of roles that are given based on an accent?
So I come from a working class background, and this was the question. I wrote an article a few months ago about this very question. And the question was, does your accent or the way you speak determine which class you come from?
Yeah.
If there's still is a class system, you know, people still talk about it. But for me personally, at that time in my life, and it was the 1980s, a lot of drama schools, not all, were quite very strict on disciplining actors, not only in the art of acting, but also in RP or received pronunciation. For me, it was a personal choice. It wasn't so much, oh, I will forget my roots. It wasn't. Remember, having a speech problem growing up was a barrier. It was a hurdle I had to overcome. I was discriminated terribly. I really was. And I found it hard to pronounce certain words. I found it hard to string sentences together. So to stand up in a class, talk to people was very difficult. To go into a school or a job interview and hold a conversation with someone was difficult. So for me, the choice was, yes, in order for me to play these parts in Shakespeare, I felt personally that it would require a more refined voice. And people often question what you've just mentioned. Has it changed? I think you're right. It has in a way, because a lot of drama schools now, when I've done my research, they encourage actors to retain their natural accent,
yep,
but to learn received pronunciation or the Queen's English or RP in order to play those characters. Now, don't get me wrong. You have to be careful here, because being wealthy doesn't mean you are part of the aristocracy or that you are upper class. You can be wealthy and still be working class, because you could earn a good living. Working class for me, if I was to define it, was I came from a northern town. My mum and dad had basic jobs, painter and decorator and a cleaner, low wage, and we had to survive. My mum and dad had to go out and try, not beg, but they would knock at doors and say, look, we don't get paid until the end of the month. Can we borrow £5? And we would go to the shop and buy the basics like potatoes, bread and beans. And my mother would do a meal. It was my choice. And I felt, well, I need to change my voice if I'm going to move forward. I think even today, when we look at films or television dramas, for example, let's take The Crown. And I know you'll agree, if you are getting someone to play, at that time, Prince Charles, for example, I don't think Prince Charles would work well if someone decided to play Prince Charles with a Liverpool accent.
I get that, Jack.
It's the same if we offer to portray the Beatles. Now, I've done many Beatles plays, playing Brian Epstein. Brian Epstein from Liverpool, but he had a refined voice, Brian Epstein, when he managed the Beatles. And that was perfect for me. These are the challenges, aren't they? And I think it'd be ridiculous if suddenly someone is going to play a very wealthy member of the aristocracy with a northern accent. Let's not knock. We're not knocking that. I think in the north, like when we look at Coronation Street or Emmerdale or Brookside from the past, or even Hollyoaks, there are certain characters that have a northern accent. And if they were to be played with the kind of voice I have, it wouldn't work.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Because there is something musical and something gritty about hearing a northern accent, and it works very, very well. So I think as actors, we have to be versatile now and very open to the changes in dialects. Now, I'll tell you what else has changed, Barrett, is years ago, it was quite simple for us actors to be called into the audition room to play maybe an Irish character or a Welsh character or a Scottish character. And if you were Northern, you could put on the Irish accent or Welsh. And some actors are brilliant or American. Today, a lot of casting directors are reluctant to do that. They would more likely see an actor with a natural native Welsh accent or Irish accent or Scottish accent. We've come a long way, haven't we? We've changed a lot.
What do you enjoy about acting?
When I was growing up, I was very curious and I wanted knowledge. And so Ron, my friend, would often come to the house and show me these brilliant British films and also the great, not just biblical films, but the Shakespeare films, the Roman films, great black and white films. And I always said to myself, wouldn't it be wonderful just to step into the shoes of another character, or even if you're playing someone from real life? And I wanted to go on that journey And I love the whole process of becoming someone else. My method as an actor has changed. I grew up through drama school thinking Stanislavski. And then after drama school, I went to RADA. I went to Richmond Drama School as well. But when I came out, I realized that there were other practitioners out there, like Sanford Meisner and Michael Chekhov, who had wonderful ideas that aligned with my thinking, because I did not want to be on the stage and bombard my mind with all these ideas and these techniques and not be in the moment.
Yes.
And I felt, well, if I'm bombarded with these ideas, I'm going to be not in the moment. Mm. And I didn't want that. And so I came, don't get me wrong, there are certain techniques I still use. I studied at Lee Strasberg as well in London. And I will use occasionally those ideas, but only as a stepping stone and only as a means within rehearsals. So I love the whole process of finding my way into a character. And to be fair and to be honest, I will use whatever I have within myself, my own memories or my imagination. And then if I don't have anything, I will explore that in other ways. So I will always go to myself first. What do I have? What emotions do I have? What memories do I have that are in line with this character? What is it we have in common? Because it's real then. Let's pick Hamlet. Do I need to do years of research? Not really. Wherever perspective you come from with Hamlet, whether he was mad, pretending to be mad, whatever concept or idea you have. For me, this is a man who lost his father. And I can relate to that because I've lost my father. You know, I don't need to spend hours or weeks or months getting into this method idea and going to a cemetery and spending hours along. No, I understand. I've lost my father. I don't need to be bombarded. It's there already. So I can relate to that. I can relate to Ophelia being depressed. I can relate to many themes within Shakespeare because I've been through them. So I will always go back to myself and see what I already have. Interestingly, Sanford Meisner, you know, there was a lot of debate about him when he was alive, and people sometimes didn't understand his ideas. But he said this: the imagination is very powerful. And sometimes, rather than go back into your past and recall a memory, use your imagination. Because sometimes our memories in the past can still haunt us and we can be overwhelmed. Yeah. Therefore, if you're on stage and you've got a memory that you haven't dealt with, you could be, well, it could kind of destroy the performance because you can become too overwhelmed. So, yeah, to answer your question, I love the whole idea of being someone else, the whole process, the journey. And the other part is, I'm like a teacher. What a privilege it is to stand on the stage, tell a story, or in front of the camera, and allow the audience to go on that journey, whether that's challenging them, whether it's moving them, whether it's getting them to think about certain aspects within society. It's great because that's your job. It's to move the audience, to move the listeners, those who are reading, if you're writing a novel. And I enjoy that. What a privilege. I see that as a fantastic role. Money helps, of course. You know, when you talk to actors, we need to survive in this world. But it's just more. It's more than money. It's a passion. It really is. And I find it such a privilege to, and I've played many roles, not just Shakespeare or Chekhov, but many roles in the past, just to pick up that script, read it, let it become organic, and just live the life of that character on stage or in front of the camera. And if the audience are moved and they applaud you and they say things to you and you challenge someone or you've made someone think about something, you've done your job.
The difference for you between doing
or portraying characters on the stage compared to portraying characters in front of the camera?
The difference is more to do with, how can I explain this? It's more to do with the camera. It's more to do with movement and stillness. It's more to do with knowing I'm on the screen now, but if I'm doing all that in front of the camera, it's going to become very off-putting. So for me, theatre, Michael Caine said it wonderfully. I can't remember the quote, but theatre is, you know, you're living out that story within 1.5 hours or 2 hours on the stage from beginning, middle to end, right? So you are living with the audience. And sometimes you have to be a little bit, you still have to find the truth. But because it's a bit like Greek theatre, the audience can't see sometimes what's going on in the eyes. The eyes are like the windows of the soul. Mm,
yes.
So sometimes we have to be a little bit bigger in theatre, not too big. We still have to have the truth. But it is a journey you go on in the matter of, 2 hours or if it's Hamlet, the first folio could be 5 hours. However, in film, unless it's shot chronologically, sometimes you're stopping, you're starting. You could film one scene one day and then pick up that scene a few weeks down the line. But for me, it is just knowing that you can sit back in front of the camera. You don't have to work hard with the camera. You don't have to push the emotions as you do in theatre. And it's a lot more intimate. You forget about the camera unless you're doing Alfie. Of course, you have to be aware of the kind of technical side. You know that yourself. You have to be aware of the mechanical things that are going on about your voice, about the microphones. But you still have to just live and be in the moment in front of the camera. Work off each other. I love what Stanford Meisner talks about, listening and reacting. And that's not just on the stage, it's in front of the camera. And there is a stillness. There is something magical about being in front of the camera because, you know, you want whoever's watching to see what's going on in here. Sometimes it's nonverbal, but you want people to know what are they thinking, what's going on. And I think for me, that's something you have to discipline yourself in when you're in front of the camera. So, yeah, it is more about knowing those shots. But it is a bit more intimate on camera. And you are limited to what you can do as regards to your movements. Yeah, I think that's basically it, really. Other actors may have other ideas. Directors may have other ideas of that. But that's my personal opinion about the two, film and theatre.
Talking currently, obviously in the past it may have been differently. What percentage of your time is on stage compared to being in front of the camera, or it's random?
When I came out to drama school, I did a lot of theatre. Chekhov, Shakespeare, Brecht. I think in 2003 and 4, I started to do some television work. Just small roles in the soaps, Coronation Street, Brookside, Hollyoaks, just to get an idea of how the cameras work and working with other actors. And then I went back into theatre. I think once I got to 2013 and I got a brilliant role in For Love's Sake, which won quite a lot of awards, which is still on Amazon, that's when I decided, do you know what, this medium of being in front of the camera on television is what I would like to pursue a lot more of. I mean, I took a break from theatre, but now I'm back in theatre, very busy with theatre at the moment. But I think my heart really is I'd love to do more film and more television. Whereas actors, we have to work. And you have the versatile. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes, and you know what, Barry, to be fair and to be honest, to be truthful, I have turned down a lot of scripts in the past, and I've read them. And sometimes you feel as an actor, it's not for me. And that doesn't mean I'm shying away from it's a bit of money. No, it's really my personality and the roles I want to take. And I think sometimes if the role is great and the script is brilliant, and I know there is a powerful message, and I ask the question, what am I saying to an audience or to to the viewers or the listeners. And if that grips me, then I'll go deep theatre. But yes, it'd be good to do more film, more television. But it does depend on the script as well. I love a good story and I love a good journey.
So you referenced that it was around 2003, 2004 when you started doing in front of the camera work.
Yeah.
Were there any aspects about that that you were surprised of at the time?
Yes, the learning about the medium of the camera. This is where, even at drama school, although we went to really drama schools, and you do get certain classes in television film, but it's predominantly theatre, voice, dance, singing, Shakespeare. But I think for me, I mean, I watched Michael Caine a little bit growing up, but as soon as I left drama school, I started to watch more of Michael Caine. And he did a video in 1984, I think it was, on film acting. And in 2003, being in front of the camera, I started to learn so much about the camera, the lighting, the sound. And one of the greatest lessons I learned for me was, even though you've got the boom or the mic, you're not playing to a theatre audience in television film. You're just being natural. You're just talking naturally to whoever's in front of you. And that took a long time to learn because I'm so used to doing the Shakespeare and the Chekhovs and being big on the stage. So that was brilliant. And also learning the sizes over the shoulder shot, close up, tight shot, master shot. And I wanted to learn that. I wanted to learn about what the editor was doing and what the sound chap was doing. So I was always curious and asking questions. And and even now, actors, in my opinion, should always be learning. They should always be learning. There's always something new to learn. So yeah, that's when I started thinking, this is interesting. And it's taken a long time. And when I do films today, television today, I'm always quick to say to the director, oh, what shot is this? Is this tight? Is it master? How much freedom do I have? Mm-hmm. How close are you? But I was never like that at drama school. I didn't have that knowledge. It's something I've learned over the years, and I'm still learning.
So what's coming up for you over the next period of time? I know it's very secretive in your guys' world. Is there anything you can tell us that's coming out over
there? Yeah, absolutely. So yep. I did a film 2 years ago playing Dr. Lansford in a British version of Halloween, which was 1979 with Jamie Lee Curtis. It's a British version, and I got to play Dr. Lansford. And a year on, or a year and a bit, I've just received the contract, which I've signed. And it's been launched now, so I will be going back to film the sequel in October as Dr. Lansford, called The Death of Michael Myers. I'm also, I wrote my autobiography in 2008, which really charts some of the things I've mentioned. What I didn't mention, as well as being working class, was that my family witnessed a tragedy in the 1970s when we were children, where my dad's friend got murdered, which was sad, in the flat where we lived. And that had a huge impact upon my family. And so I wrote my book in 2008 about my hyperactivity and speech problems and overcoming the hurdles and what it was like growing up in the 80s. Now, that's now been adapted into a film script by a BAFTA director.
Oh, well.
Who will direct. It's also been adapted into a play, which I'm directing, which is going to be at a festival in August. I'm also rehearsing for a big play, which is called On the Banks of the Royal Blue Mersey. Now, I'm not a football person, but I narrate the story of Everton Football Club, which is Liverpool. You've got Liverpool and Everton in Liverpool.
Yeah.
And this is about Everton Football Club. And I narrate the story of Everton Football Club in a humorous way. And yes, whatever comes my way. So you've always got to be looking. And even though I have a brilliant agent, by the way, we are co-workers. I think as actors, my encouragement to actors is, number one, never stop learning. And number two, be a co-worker. with your agent. Don't expect the phone to ring all the time. Go out and find the work yourself as well as your agent, and also create your own work. So I think for me, that's what I like to do as well, is create my own work.
Do you think it's easier these days with the advent of YouTube, TikTok and that for people to create their own work compared to back in the day? Because now they've got the cameras, they've got these platforms where they can do their bits and bobs on and then display it, compared to before, which was more like the televisions that we had and the studios had more of the power.
You know what? Before social media came out, you're probably too young to remember, but I came from an era when we only had three channels. We didn't have mobiles. We had a phone which you had to dial, and a red phone box that you'd go in if you couldn't afford a phone. And then we got MTV coming out, and then the multi-channels. But TikTok, Instagram are new, and I think it's a great platform, even for actors, to launch whatever they're promoting. I think it's a good platform to promote. I think the danger is that we have to be careful, and I think you have to do a lot of research, because there are things on Instagram and YouTube or TikTok which may not be necessarily true, so we need to be very careful, so certainly when it comes to medical facts. So we need to be very careful. I think you have to ask the question, what am I doing this for?
Yes.
You know, am I doing this for fame? Am I doing it for money? Do I want to get famous? Do I want to get well known? My personal point of view, I will use Instagram or TikTok as a means of promoting my work. I mean, yes, it'd be great if a casting director and a famous director sees something I'm promoting or a little clip of a film and says, oh, he's perfect. That'd be wonderful. Right? Don't think it should place the agent. I don't think it should place the work that we have to put in to find our acting work. I think we need to be very careful. So we have to ask the question, what are we using it for, to be honest? This profession is very precarious, but also sometimes people come and go. Someone once said that the newspaper is the next day's chip shop paper. I know that is an old saying. You know, you need stamina, you need longevity, you need to know what, you need a unique selling point when you're on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. You need to know where you're going and what you're selling. And don't get me wrong, we both know that some people have launched brilliant careers, like influencers, or people that have done documentaries, or people that started out singing, and they're doing very, very well. But that's the rarity. So I'm not saying don't use it. I'm just saying be very, very careful that it doesn't overtake what you really set out to do. Because, you know, for me, having an agent or being a co-worker or working hard yourself, self-representing yourself, you know, that's really where the hard work is.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Do you know what? I've got one thing which I say to every young person and adult. Never let anyone kill your dream.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.